I thought I was being really gutsy with my work, but no, I was within this little bubble that I created, and I've had to break through that. And it was a bit hard. It's still hard because I'm still trying to break barriers.
You're listening to the Ink and Paint Folk Podcast, a look at animation through the women and non-binary folk who make it. I'm your host, Kira Rodriguez, and today's guest is Grace Wong, a designer at Kickstart Entertainment. Grace went to the Emily Carr University of Art and Design, taking a BFA in concept art at the beginning of her journey. She graduated and took up a matte painting freelance before transitioning to become a fully-fledged background designer she is today. Grace is also an amazing social media supervisor at Rise Up Animation and spearheads many of the projects you may see on their Instagram, Twitter, and even LinkedIn. In this episode, she will share her journey of how she transitioned from being a matte painter to a background designer, her self-growth along the way, as well as tips and tricks if you want to pursue the route of a background designer in the animation industry. So grab a beverage of your choice, sketch while you listen if you like, and enjoy!
So, hi everybody, my name is Grace Wong. I go by she, her, hers. I was born in Hong Kong and I came to Vancouver, Canada when I was about 13 years old. So that was about 10 years ago. I am a designer at Kickstart Entertainment. And it's an animation studio based in Vancouver. I'm also a Rise Up Animation social media supervisor. And it's been about 6 months since I became one. And I just got into VisDev about a year ago, and I love doing backgrounds, so I like telling a story in one image. It just clicks better compared to game concept art that I used to do. I was pursuing game concept art for the longest time, and it just, somehow I would create the drawings, and then it just wouldn't click with me. I couldn't feel like I've fulfilled something in a way, so I tried VisDev, and I'm like, okay, this is not bad. Maybe I'll pursue animation. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I love that. What about like the game concept art didn't click with you?
So
like, if you don't mind me asking.
Yeah, I used to do a lot of photo bashing. So it's like a technique where you put image in your drawing and then you kind of paint on top of it, or merge image with your painting, essentially. And I remember doing it and I was like, oh, I wish I could have painted that, because in a way, I felt like I was skipping a lot of important process of understanding what painting is. And so when I finish a painting, or a matte painting, that's what they call it, it didn't feel like I did something. I don't know if that made sense, but I just wanted to feel like I drew the whole thing myself. And so, I just switched from that to visual development, and I focused more on just color, light, composition, and all that. It's like I had to relearn everything again. That's what made me switch.
Nice. Was it difficult when you had to like relearn everything, or do you take it as like a fun thing to do?
It was hard because I graduated during the pandemic, so May 2020, and I was unemployed for about a year. And during that time, I felt like I was really lost. I didn't know what to do. I tried more matte paintings and I didn't like any of that. And so I think by the time I wanted to try VisDev, I was like, okay, well, maybe I can give this a go. But I didn't go in with the mindset of, you know, feeling excited about it. It was more desperate than anything. So I was like, okay, maybe something good would come out of it. And then something did. So when I did my first painting, full-fledged painting without like photo bashing and whatnot, I was like, okay, maybe I can do this. And 2 months later, I got my first job, which is Kickstart.
Nice. Yeah, it's a
so
great
it worked
story.
Out well.
Yeah. It sounds like it really did. Okay, now that you mentioned your job as a designer at Kickstart, what does a day-to-day look like for you?
It's a little bit different each day, but I usually start off with doing touch-ups of work that I've done the previous day, which are mostly props. There are a lot of big prop designs that I have to work on, which is great because I think the company wants to train me to do more and more things in the future. That's why they're giving me more tasks, which is great. I do a little bit of backgrounds, but not so much lately. So yeah, in the morning is just me submitting work from the previous day after doing some touch-ups. And then around noon, that's when I start getting the new tasks done and getting feedback from the art director and to improve on, you know, other tasks that I submitted earlier that day.
Nice. Was it like when you first started as a designer, did you find it very challenging? Like the learning curve very big, very steep?
Yeah, it was very stressful because when I got the job, they wanted me to do color keys, color and lighting keys, and I just got into it immediately, and I think the first color key that I did took 2 days. Which normally takes like 3 hours or 2 hours. And the art directors then in that production were very, very nice to me. Like they were very patient with, you know, just helping me out and creating a composition. And after that, I think it was about a week that I felt like I was dying in a way. Because I don't want to mess this up. Like it's the stress from not wanting to mess up. And yeah. Yeah, it's just an unnecessary stress that I put on myself. So I think after that, it became a lot better. And so I was doing lighting keys for 8 months for that one production.
Nice.
Yeah, and then by the end of it, I was able to do 4 to 5 a day.
Ooh, yeah. Look at that progress.
So I was pretty proud of it by the end of it. And then after that production was wrapped up, I also jumped into other productions done in very different style, and I think one of them is like a graphic novel style, and I've never done proper line work before, so yeah. And luckily the art director was kind enough to train me to have me go through the process for about a week and a half, and by the end of it I was slightly better, but I just realized that yeah, my line work needs improvement for sure. And then now in this new production, because of what I've done, they're like, okay, maybe we should give Grace more work, just to, you know, expand the stuff that I can cover, which is props, a bit of backgrounds and some concepts too.
Wow. That sounds lovely. Like, throughout your whole time at Kickstart, what do you feel like your biggest personal struggle was? And like, how did you overcome it?
Personal struggle. Being too hard on myself. Because I'm working from home and I get feedbacks from directors and art directors every day. But still, I would feel like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. Or else the first pass would have been perfect. Just stuff like that. But sometimes I had to realize the client that we communicate with will probably change their minds throughout the time that we design a prop or a background whatsoever, and so it's not my fault in any way or anybody's fault, but I would still feel like, oh, it's my responsibility. It's my fault that they had to keep doing the second and third or fourth pass. So that's the one thing that I have to consistently remind myself, is to not blame myself for things that I have no control over. And if I have control over certain things, I will try to do my best. And
I mean, I kind of feel how you feel as an artist. Like, you always feel like, I should have done this. Like, we always tend to be like harder on ourselves. And like, you know, those nights of like imposter syndrome. And
yep, like, I have a lot of that. You know?
Right, me too. Me too. Feeling a lot of that right now. But that's a whole nother topic. In itself, but I think what you're doing is great. And just, it's a great mindset. Yeah,
it's a lot to learn from the art directors that I work with. Yeah. And they're patient and very patient. And every time I ask a question, even though it's like the dumbest question, for me anyway, they would answer it. I'd be like, okay. And it takes a while for me to connect the dots for everything. And so, I'm lucky to have this as my first job.
Yeah, I mean, having, like, good bosses is also, like, a very critical part of like how to say, sorry, a very critical part of like your growth in the company mm-hmm. as well. Because they're patient enough to like explain to you like the different things and like how things work. You're also able to grow as an artist. So I think having that factor is like amazing. It's really amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. So you mentioned that you're from Canada. Yes. What's the animation industry like over there?
I would say it's booming right now. I can't speak for all studios or the east side because I'm based in the west, so I don't know much about Toronto, but I would say it's really, really improving for the past few years with inflation going on. And plus, Disney just opened up a studio here in Vancouver. I would say it's really getting there. I think we're starting to really go in full bloom.
Nice.
Yeah. Love it. It's getting there.
Would you want to work at the Disney studio?
Perhaps. I'm not too sure. Like, there are many places that I really want to try. I'm also trying to do more freelance jobs. So having my full-time job here in this, and also some freelance work on the side, I think I can maybe handle that. Maybe with Rise of Animation, that's like three jobs in total if I do have a freelance job.
Yeah,
I just want to give that a try and just try to control my just workflow timeline and projection and all that. See how it goes from there.
Yeah, but when you start like doing freelance and everything, your schedule starts to get even more packed than it already is, and it already sounds super packed. How do you intend to like take care of yourself, like, maintain balance between your work and your home life, you know?
How do I balance? That's a good question. I mean, I'm still struggling with that. So, well, there's my full-time job, so it's not exactly 9 to 5, but that's my priority every day from Monday to Friday. I would usually get that done first. And maybe during lunchtime, when there's an email that I have to do for Rise of Animation, then I'll just spend that time drafting emails. And once I'm done with my full-time job at 5, 6, then I'll start doing emails that night, every evening pretty much, and send them out to my team, my social media team. If I ever do personal work, it'll be during the night, you know, during the night as well, spending a couple hours. And sometimes when I overdo things, which I always do, it could go like past midnight, which is I'm working on that.
It's okay. We all gotta burn the midnight oil once in a while, you know.
Yeah, and then I have my hamsters to play with too. I have two hamsters. Their names are Sol and Umi, and they're born in June, so 10 months old. Unfortunately, they don't get along well, so I have to separate them. But yeah, they're cute. They're really great. when I'm stressed with work or when I feel like, you know, not drawing, then I'll just play with them.
Oh, I love that. Love that, yeah. Animals always bring me comfort as well. Whenever I'm stressed, I'll just go and like pet my puppy, and then he'll like run around and start playing with me around the house. And I'm like, oh my god, no! I have to go back to work. We can't do this.
I was told that I was how do I say it, a human version of my hamsters, which is a compliment and not so much a compliment at the same time, because they have extremely good survival instincts, but they can be very, like, they don't have good eyesight, so they can only see maybe 2 inches ahead of them. And so when I try to do tricks with them, they would just look around looking like they don't know what they're doing. It's like they're blank. Like, they have a very blank expression. So I guess I am the embodiment of that. I am kind of smart, but not really at the same time. So, yeah, there you go.
It's okay. My dog is the same thing. Like, sometimes he has very smart eyes, but sometimes when he looks at me, it's just like no thoughts, hit empty. And I don't know what's going on in there.
Because prey animals, they have eyes on the side. So when you look at them from the front, they look like they're lost.
I don't know, man. Like, I love animals, but sometimes when they look at you, like my dog, when he looks at me, sometimes he looks very goofy and he likes to put his tongue out. So it just doesn't help.
Oh, like just subconsciously have his tongue hang out?
Sometimes, yeah.
Love it.
Yeah, I can send you photos later. But yeah, anyway, back to the topic. Yeah, I wanted to move on to the next question. As a background artist, right? How were you able to find your footing stylistically? And like, how did you hone your portfolio to pivot into the direction that you wanted to?
Oh, so yeah, I did a lot of concept art for gamings before. Game in well, not for actual big companies, but I wanted to pursue that field, and you know, that involved a lot of not just photo bashing, but a lot of details that I really have to put in. And so I ended up overdoing a lot because of that. And I think when I transitioned to VisDev, when I try to paint backgrounds, there was just a lot of unnecessary details that I would try to put everywhere to make it look like a photograph, essentially. And I don't think I was aware of any of that until some a mentor told me that, yeah, you need to pick the focal point in your drawing and not have every single detail on this piece of rock on the side. So I'm still trying to find my footing there. Sometimes I still overdo it. But it's a lot better now. I just try to focus on the focal point of the painting that I'm trying to create. But there are moments that I'm just like, oh, but I really want to add details to this bush on the right side. And
Oh,
yeah, but it's still going, and it's been about a year, so I think this is going to be a constant learning curve for me, to just not overdo things. In terms of honing my portfolio, I met with a Rise Up Animation mentor, Vicky Poy. Everybody knows her. We all love her. She said, find Craig Mullins' portfolio and be as 30% good as him, then you're good for the rest of your life or something like that. And I was like, okay. And I looked up his portfolio. I'm like, oh God, this is gonna be a
Oh,
long
this is the
journey.
standard.
Yeah. And then there's another mentor that said, just be as 10% good as Craig Mullins, then you're good. I'm like, okay, should I go for 10 or 30%? So maybe I'll go for 20%, but
Yeah, right in the middle.
right in the middle. It's a good compromise. So yeah, okay. So I'm like, okay, cool, I'll try this. And there's still a lot of details. If you see all of my early work from last year, a bit of photo bashing, I think. Yeah, a little bit, because I used The Sims to create the base of my drawing. For one of them, it was a tiger, a lot of tigers with a mother figure in the kitchen cooking. That was one of my first piece, and there were a bit of photo bashing for the dishes, and the floor itself is a 3D model from The Sims. So I didn't paint that, but yeah, so that was my first piece ever when I transitioned from creating concept art for games to VisDev work. So yeah, so you can see a blend of both worlds, and then after that it becomes a lot more painterly and just be more free. Yeah, because I used to be very tight and just strict with the way I paint things, and now I'm just trying to be more relaxed. Yeah.
That's great. Like, I love how you said more relaxed, because like when you said that, I just immediately thought of organic paintings, you know, and how like the net like more organic paintings can speak to you a lot more than like very rigid artworks, you know.
Yeah, it tells a lot about the artist's personality too. I know people talk about this a lot, but when I look at my early paintings, like there's nothing about the artist that you can tell. But it's like, okay, it's a great piece of work, but I want to just, I guess in a way it extends to my personal life as well, the way I draw. So yeah, I think seeing that transition with the work that I have now versus the work that I had a year ago is it's a big change. Yeah, it'll just keep changing throughout the years for
Yeah, that's
sure.
great. Like, how do you feel about like the progress that you've made so far? Like, if you don't mind me asking.
How do I feel about my progress?
Yeah, like if you look at your first piece compared to like your most recent piece.
I was very proud of my first piece because I'm like, okay, I didn't know I could actually do this, and I did. And then in the middle, there were times that I'm like, oh, I don't like this. I'm losing my edge. There are a lot of moments like that in between, and I still do. But I just have to learn not to be too anal about myself. That's the one thing too. I'm just too hard on myself. So yeah, like a lot of plein air paintings that I'm doing lately, because it's plein air April, everybody. It's
plug it.
Yeah, I try to be more relaxed with my brush strokes, the way I you know, well, it's controlled in a way, but not so controlled. So finding that middle ground for myself is essential to me, and
I'm
on the road to find that.
That's great. Yeah, I love that. That's like, sometimes when I look back at like my first digital art piece, like the first thought that comes to my mind is like, oh, why does it look like that? But then like looking at like the process and the whole journey behind it, you're like, actually I'm glad it kind of looks like that, because like I see the progress, I see the improvement, and
I agree.
Yeah, it's a thing. Okay, so we talked about how you're able to find your footing, but like, so far in your career, do you have any regrets, like choosing the path that you are choosing right now?
I like where I am right now at my job, but I wish I had done more things sooner before I got my first job. So when I was in university, I didn't do any volunteer work. I didn't participate in Lightbox or, you know, any type of virtual art events, because I think at that time I was like, yeah, I'm not interested in animation. I mean, I should check it out just to get to know more about, you know, other parts of the industry, but I didn't, because I was just lazy. I was a lazy child. So I think
I get you.
For like the first 3 years of summer in university, I just did nothing but just do maybe one or two paintings in the summer. And by the fourth year, I was like, yeah, I gotta do something. And so I participated in a volunteer event called Art Breakers. It's based in Vancouver, and it's a local art event for local artists to gather and, you know, sell their art. So it's like a mini Lightbox expo, but for Vancouver artists.
That's nice, yeah.
Yeah, and I thought to myself, yeah, I should have done these sooner, because now I have to cramp everything that I have to do in 1 year before I graduated, and then, you know, get into the career that I want to be in. So even after I graduated, when I was unemployed, there were a lot of thoughts where I just kept blaming myself for not doing enough, you know? So, yeah, those are my regrets, I could say, yeah.
But do you look back and, like, you realize your improvement, or, like, how you're working on, like, those regrets, if that makes sense?
Yeah, that's why I joined Rise of Animation. I really wanted to start doing something with... not just with myself, but I want to help. I don't know how exactly I want to help, but I know this is a really good first place to start, being part of Rise of Animation and just meeting you, Kira, and all the other amazing supervisors and founders and the team. We have amazing teams, so yeah it's just,
we have an amazing team.
It's great.
You mentioned Rise of Animation earlier, so do you want to like talk a little bit more about your role as a social media supervisor at Rise of Animation marketing and PR team? And do you want to talk a little bit more about how like you feel your contribution like impacts people?
So as a social media supervisor, I manage the projects that essentially goes on to social media. So I don't know if anybody has noticed, but there's a project that we launched called What Rise of Animation Means to You. And it's a platform for mentees or mentors to, mostly mentees, to voice their opinion about Rise of Animation. And so we want to create projects that provides a platform for people to express themselves, to represent the animation industry, and create projects that are also within the Rise of Animation guidelines. So anything that represents diversification, representation in the animation industry, it's something that we would love to represent, share with the community. So there's a project that we are about to launch. It's called The Food Memories. And it's essentially sharing food from various cultures from around the world. And we send out questionnaire forms to mentees asking what their favorite food is. And they will, you know, fill out the form, and our lovely team would then pick the answers and draw the food or the dish that the specific mentee has picked. And then we would post it on Instagram,
so
saying,
nice,
hey, this is the dish that mentee so-and-so picked. why is it important to this culture, and then they'll explain it in the slides, and then we would also be sharing the recipe. So, like, you know, projects like that to just help people learn and understand other people's cultures, and like why, like, you don't have to like the dish, but learn why other people think that this particular dish is important during weddings or funerals whatsoever.
I love that whole project. It sounds it sounds great, because like food essentially connects people, and like the additional factor of like having a story told behind the food is also so heartwarming as well.
Yeah, exactly. And everybody loves food. I'm sure we do.
So
what better way to connect? Food. Yeah. So we have four small groups at the moment in my team. So four different projects going on. So every time when a project is done, I'll put them on Instagram or Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn whatsoever. And yeah, just share information to the world.
That's a lovely... Lovely summary of what you do. And it's, Grace is an amazing social media supervisor. Like, it's so nice working with her.
Ah, stop it.
She's so organized. No. I'm gonna say it's really nice working with you. It's very organized and you're so on the ball all the time. Love it. Okay. So one last thing about background artists before we move into the next topic. Are there any courses worth checking out if I wanted to be a background artist?
Nathan Folks. He did Prince of Egypt. He also did, I don't know how to say her name. Raya and the Last Dragon.
Okay. I didn't know he worked on that.
I worked on that. He just shared one of the concept arts he did on Instagram.
Oh my god!
I didn't know he worked on that.
I'm so outdated.
And there's also okay. So this lovely artist called Daisuke Tsutsumi. Mm. He worked on Ice Age, Toy Story 3, Robots, Horton Hears a Who. He has a course called Painting with Light and Color.
That's a good
for
course.
For those that really have to hone on their skills with color and how it incorporates light and whatsoever, he's the great person to go to.
Are all of these from Schoolism?
Most of the courses that I'm listing right now are from Schoolism. There are also courses from CGMA, but CGMA is focusing more on the game side of things, I believe. Sometimes, but you can still apply those skills that you learn from CGMA to 3D animation, 2D animation whatsoever, because they have illustration courses and character design, which is applicable across all fields in the industry. These two, and Craig Mullins, I'm so surprised that he actually has a course. Painting sci-fi from start to finish. This is not sponsored, by the way. I just like these artists, and I've looked at their content and it's amazing, so check them out.
Nice. I love all those recommendations. I think if I wanted to be a background painter one day, I'll check them out.
On Instagram and follow artists everywhere that shares tutorials on their feed or their demo reel on Instagram. Like, they're maybe 5 minutes or 10 minutes, but to know an artist's process is also very helpful, even though it's just a 5 minute thing, and you know exactly how they think, how they do, you know, they're showing their technique at the same time, and it's great. So if you want like a short tutorial instead of a full-fledged 12-week course, then yeah, definitely go on Instagram and follow these artists and check their reels.
Yeah Actually, speaking of artists and like a demo, right? I realized that Rise Up Animation also has a panel on their YouTube channel with John Neveris?
Right.
Sorry, I'll cut that out. Rise Up Animation has... I want to shamelessly plug Rise Up Animation because they have a panel with John Neveris for designing for production over on the Rise Up Animation YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. So... I think that's a good resource because the whole panel was actually designed to be a live demo. And when you watch it, you can actually see like the whole thought process that he has behind like his designing. And I think it's pretty useful. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree because I'm looking at his work right now. I'm spying on these artists. Yeah, he has a lot of black and white images of backgrounds. And yeah, like, it's not like a full-fledged painting, which is fine, but you're seeing that little part of the process of the artist, and it's still great to know how they think.
Yeah. And like, essentially, before you have the fully like fledged color and light in a painting, you do need to have a very firm base for your story.
Exactly.
So I think looking at artist process is a great way to learn as well. Yeah, I totally agree with you.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Okay, so we're going to move into our next section of like self-growth. And I'm going to ask you the first question, how do you think you've grown since you first started your craft? And like you mentioned that you graduated in a pandemic. Has this pandemic played a part in your growth? I know you mentioned it like loosely earlier, but if you want, you can go into in-depth a bit more. In your answer, yeah.
So I started drawing when I was about 15 or 16 when I discovered what a tablet was. And I saw Dylan Cole's concept art for Tron Legacy. And I'm like, oh my God, I didn't know you could draw these things out before knowing that 3D existed. Nice. I was like, okay. I don't have an old painting that I did, but it was horrible. So if you had to compare my 16-year-old self to my 23-year-old self, there's definitely progress. There has been a lot of progress. And for the past, I would say for the first 5-6 years, I was so focused on my technique that I didn't really connect like the personal side of me to my craft. And at that time, people talked a lot about, oh, what you do in your hobbies or your interests can really affect the way you express yourself in your work. And back then I was like, that's BS. I don't want people to know what my personal life is. So, you know, like that.
Right.
Had when I was a child, my immature child.
And yeah.
It's only last year when I wanted to transition to VizDev, everything happened during that transition, actually, that I felt like, oh, maybe I should try. Like, I'm scared, but I'll try it. And I don't have to tell everything about myself and relate everything to my craft, but it's still important to have a piece of me. Like, it doesn't matter if it's passion or just, like, you know, emotions that I was feeling or when I'm feeling during the process of creating crafts or paintings.
Yeah,
it definitely helps as a drive, as a motivation. Sorry, the rocks music came out. It's about drive, it's about power. Okay,
it's about drive, it's about power.
Just to incorporate some of that into my work, really, it really helped just to push forward. And just try to break boundaries and stuff, because I thought I was being really gutsy with my work, but no, I was within this little bubble that I created, and I've had to break through that, and it was a bit hard.
Yeah.
It's still hard because I'm still trying to break barriers within my personal, you know, whatever struggles that I'm going through.
I relate to that. I can imagine, but it's great that like you're already like wanting to break barriers and like push yourself. Like the more you try and like the more like different techniques that you're doing, like how your director's also pushing you, you know, like you start to learn more and like you start to like hone your creative eye, your critical eye. And I think that's great.
yeah, they do help a lot. And the people that I work with in the studio, I've never asked them directly, but I always try to learn how the pipeline works by learning how they respond to me or how, you know, why would they pause this certain task and work on this other thing? And it's like, you know, trying to understand it's not about me. It's about the whole production process.
Yeah,
maybe the script had some error and they had to fix certain things, so we're not able to move on with a certain prop or a background. Just, you know, thinking ahead and trying to plan I had like the design coordinators that we have in my studio, and it helps a lot because I'm also a supervisor at Rise of Animation. So planning ahead, scheduling things, and just projecting things really, it's essential to know those things so I don't become so trapped in this little bubble of mine. Just to think ahead.
And yeah.
I'm not the only person working in this in this project, so.
Just
trying to expand my perspective when versus when I was still young and immature 3-4 years ago, thinking that screw these people. But now, when I look on Instagram, I really admire these artists. Doesn't matter if they're people I know or just famous artists. I try to see what they create in their work, not just why did they paint in a certain way, whatnot, and but also don't linger too much on social media because it does provide a lot of unnecessary stress. There are moments where I'm not good enough. Like, why am I not drawing every day? But I know I'm not the type of person that can draw every single day, so I can't compare myself to them. Setting boundaries for myself, that's a very big thing during the process of, you know, growing in the animation field. Be more open-minded in the way as well.
Yeah, a lot of the skills that you mentioned actually sound like soft skills rather than like technical skills. Because personally, I believe that even if your technical skills are like superb, eventually every artist has to build like some sort of soft skills, because animation is a very collaborative medium, you know, so like you can't always be in your own bubble and like expect like the whole pipeline to evolve around you, because it isn't. And learning to build these skills from the very beginning is also an amazing is an amazing thing that you're doing, and I think it's great.
Ah, thanks. Yeah, it helps by meeting more people in person, and instead of assuming how people would behave, just truly learn about the other person's personality and why they do things a certain way can help you appreciate them more, and also what you can learn from them. So as someone said, I think my art director said something about hire someone smarter than you so you can learn from them. And I'm like,
yeah,
I don't have to be the smartest in the room. I hire someone smarter than me so I can learn from them and keep learning.
Yeah. Having that mindset is great, because you will go far, and I know it. You will go far, Grace.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Hopefully, fingers crossed.
You will. No, fingers crossed. I know with this mindset you will.
Yeah. Text me in 10 years and we'll find out.
Okay, I'll schedule send a message. To you by email.
In 10 years.
Hi Grace, just checking in. So, where are you in life?
Well, can we actually do that on Gmail? Just curious.
We can try.
Because you can schedule scan on a certain calendar. Like, I don't know if we can schedule in 10 years.
You can schedule send, but I'm not sure whether it's schedule send like that far ahead. We can definitely try. Yeah. Can you try after this? Okay, but after talking about that, oh my gosh, I almost forgot the next question. Okay, the next one that I have for you is, how do you maintain self-care? Let me ask that again. How do you do self-care and maintain balance in your life?
Other than my, you know, managing my workflow with my full-time job and Rise of Animation and potentially a future freelance job, I try to, well, other than spending time with my hamsters, I love baking, so I love making cheesecake, Portuguese tarts, anything that's related to baking, I'll do it.
Oh my god, I'll send you some recipes.
Please do. But yeah, just making stuff, it helps me relax a lot, and it's one of those things that I don't rush myself when I, you know, stir the dough or whatever. And I was like, oh, maybe I should just apply that mentality to my craft, just because sometimes I would rush a lot, thinking that I'm not going to be able to make it to the deadline. But yeah, just like, you know, side hobbies like baking can help me really relax my mind. And I also love to hike. I love to travel, even though we've been trapped in our homes for 2 years. I'm actually going somewhere in the next few months. I'll tell you after this
Oh,
podcast because it's not fully confirmed
I'm so
yet, but
excited.
yeah, I'm so excited about it. So yeah,
Exciting,
I try to travel
exciting,
when I can.
exciting.
And as I said, I'm not the type of person that can draw every day. And so in the meantime, I try to just look at people's tutorials on not just YouTube, but Instagram and Schoolism. Yeah. Does that answer the
Yeah,
question?
that's lovely. Yeah, it does. It does. It definitely does. Okay, I have a next question for you. What's your favorite thing to bake?
Oh, lately it changes. That's the thing. I love Portuguese tarts. I keep saying this. I'm so boring, I know, but I love making
The egg
tarts.
dots,
Yeah,
the
the
Portuguese
Portuguese
egg dots.
tarts.
I
Yeah.
love
Yeah.
eating those.
They're really sweet, but I love it. I
Yeah.
have a sweet tooth and it's terrible because I eat a lot of sweets every day.
It's
Ch double chocolate muffin. I love chocolate, so everything has to be double.
you tried
What
baking macaroons?
Yes! Oh my gosh. I tried it
Yes.
once and it's Earl Grey flavor.
Oh my god,
Love
I
it.
did that too. That's my
Really?
first
When?
macaroon I baked. Yeah, like years ago.
Oh, nice. Hell yeah. Yeah, I love macarons and they're really, really sweet. But I always have that trouble trying to have the feet rise. You know, there's a feet that goes around
Yes,
the
oh my
macaron
God.
at the bottom, and
Yeah.
usually when it rises, the center would be hollow. And I don't think it's supposed to be hollow. Anyway, so I'm still trying to master that craft. But yeah, I love baking
Yeah.
these things.
Nice. I will share with you a few recipes after this.
Please do.
You're gonna have so much fun. Okay, so we're almost down to our last few questions for you. The next question I have for you is, who is your favorite fictional character and why?
Oh God.
I
Okay, everybody, I told Kira about the two that I will not talk about because I'm very kind of not so really, but kind of embarrassed by it. But I
see
no, okay,
you
but I have other fictional characters I'd like to share.
laughing.
I like Elizabeth Bennet from Pride and Prejudice. Yeah, she's
Oh.
a strong ass character, and I love the actress too, Keira Knightley. She's really good at portraying characters from not medieval age, but like, you know, in period dramas, she plays really great characters, and I don't know how she does. Maybe she just has that timeless look. That's why she
Maybe she
gets
does.
hired by for you know to act in those period dramas a lot. But yeah, I love female characters. Hell yeah, classic female characters. And even though she's you know she's one of those characters that lived in a very patriarchal society, I'm just like, dang, she's so badass. She just says whatever she wanted to. What's his name? Mr. Darcy or something? Hell yeah. I love how
I
confident she
think
was.
it's real. Yeah.
And then there's a second character. I like Sherlock Holmes. I don't like his personality because he's a dick, but I like
For
the way
real.
he deduces in crime. And I know it, like even the show or the movie, it's a lot more dramatized, but I just like learning how people deduce things. Deduction is like the one thing that I really want to learn. And I was thinking of, oh, maybe when I was a kid, I thought of becoming a cop, but then
Oh,
I'm too P word for that, so I'm not gonna say
that's
it. yeah, I just watch crime movies or dramas just to, you know, learn how these fictional characters make deductions as they solve a crime. And I love crime. Watching crime. I don't
Oh,
like crime. Oh my God, I'm gonna reiterate
don't
that.
do crime, Grace.
I
Don't
like
be a criminal.
watching documentaries about crime. There you go.
Crime documentaries are also my go-to, where I just want something like an hour long to be played in the background when I'm drawing. I think it's
Yeah.
great.
I realize that whenever I listen to documentaries like that are super dark, and when I draw it, I don't know, it affects my mood. And sometimes I would, you know, end up drawing certain things I don't like and I would redo it.
Oh
Yeah, so I don't know, but I want to listen to crime documentaries too when I
no.
draw
I
because
feel
that's the only
you.
time I listen to it. So I don't know, I'll find a way.
I don't know. Maybe you have to like flesh out a piece that's very dark, then you just put your whole playlist in the background.
I actually went through a phase in university where I drew a lot of really dark stuff or just really ominous characters. I used to do a lot of characters and it didn't click mm-hmm. with me, so I gave up on that for now. But yeah, I went through a phase of just drawing really like dark,
edgy stuff.
Okay. And yeah, I don't know what happened.
I feel like I had that phase when I was 13.
Oh gosh.
When I was watching anime and all those. That specific phase. Okay. Anyway.
Tell me
I'm
about it.
I'm gonna stop exposing myself. Yeah. Okay. So I know you mentioned it many, many times earlier, but who is your favorite creator / artist / writer and why? You have to choose one. Just one.
But you said creator, artist, and writer. They're three different categories.
Creators or artists or writer.
You did not say that earlier. Fine.
I said /
God, I don't want to pick that one person only because it's not fair.
Okay, pick two.
Okay, fine. I like Domishi. Hell yeah, Turning Red Bao.
Yeah,
it made me cry a lot. It was right before they play The Incredibles in the cinema. Then they played Bao. I'm like, dude, this is supposed to be an exciting night. And the entire theater was crying. And there's like this person that was sniffing behind me. As Bao was wrapping up. And we were all just kind of laughing and crying at the same time. So, yeah, thank you, Domishi. But yeah, second one. Dice Izumi. I love his color work, and I've been working on my color skills or whatnot, shape design, lighting. So yeah, Dice.
Yeah, there you go. I love those artists that you've chosen. Very good choices. I love it. Okay, so now you can tell me more about everybody that you like. Who are you digging right now? And share with us their social media handles so that we can check them out.
Ooh, it will take a while for me to say all these artists' names, but there's a classic
take your time.
Artist named Wollop, WLOP. I'm sure everybody knows him. He does a lot of, or she, they. I never knew the person, but they do a lot of character designs and highly realistic work. I think this person was an engineer before. I don't remember exactly. Whoa. But they had a, you know, they transitioned to, you know, art at one point in their lives, and yeah, now they're pursuing art and now they're super, super famous. There's also Robert Kondo. He did a lot of work with Tonko House. Yeah, amazing work. He had a very similar style as Dice, just a lot really good with color and light. This third artist, Angela Sung, everybody knows her by Ango the Mango on Instagram. She also hosts, I think, one of the hosts for Warrior Painters, and they're currently hosting a plein air April challenge right now. Do it, everybody. But
are you gonna participate?
Yes, I actually just finished one today. So I'm gonna
post it
on my channel later. She's an art director at Netflix, and she does a lot of background designs. Really lovely paintings. Like, her brushstrokes are so deliberate and amazing. Like, you can tell that I just want to be like her. I looked at her recent work, and the rocks that she painted and all that is very deliberate, and I just want to achieve that in some way. So yeah,
you can believe you.
Definitely check her out. And then there's this artist, I don't know how to pronounce her last name, I'm so sorry, but her name is Diana Marsiglias. She was an art director at, or she still is, I think, art director at Pixar for Luca. And she has this amazing vintage style to her. Like, she dresses up like she's from the 60s or 70s. I don't know the era, sorry. Maybe even earlier. But yeah, she has this really lovely persona, and I saw her talk on Lightbox Expo last year, and she seems like a very nice person. Definitely check her out. And of course, I gotta say something about our lovely Bobby Pontias. he was one of the founders for Rise of Animation, and a lovely art director. One small step art director or director, Bobby Pontias. Definitely check him out. I know he's trying to pursue more in character design. He's currently a director at Disney TV, I believe. I might be saying this wrong, but
he's a
lovely person to chat with.
He's very chill.
Like, I spent the past 10 minutes trying to figure out who the artist is. So there you go.
It's okay. Those are lovely. What about Craig Mullins?
Yeah, definitely Craig Mullins. Of course he's going to be on the list. I'm trying to shed light to artists that are not as famous as Craig Mullins. Well, they're not as famous, but people that deserve a platform other than Craig Mullins. No offense, Craig Mullins.
No. I love all those. Recommendations, we'll definitely check them out. Send me the link.
Sure.
So we're down to our last three questions.
Hell yeah.
Yay. Okay. So what is something that you know now that you wish you knew sooner?
Oh no. There are many things. Career wise or personal?
Can be both.
Be more open minded. That's one of the things that I mentioned earlier. If I need to learn, if I want to learn, then I need to have an open mindset. I don't have to necessarily agree with everybody, but to understand how other people think can really help hone my own opinion or perspective towards, it doesn't matter if it's art or my everything about the world. And there's also this T-shaped skill set that I think I talked about earlier. Did I?
You didn't.
Yeah, people say this a lot, and I don't know who was, who the inventor was for this T-shaped skill set, my theory, but not theory. So the letter T, that vertical stroke that represents the expertise that you possess. So be very, very, very good at one thing and be also good at other things, which represents the horizontal stroke of the T letter. So everything that you're very good at is supported by this extremely good skill that you possess. So I think it applies a lot to my craft as well, because I want to be very, 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 very good with background designs, and also be good with, learning Blender and a bit of character designs here and there. So the big skill and the other big skills.
Yeah, it's like having a variety of skills but just honing in on one, and like just doing that one skill like really well, but you still like have the resource to like and the knowledge to do other things as well.
Yeah, so in a way it's expanding from my expertise in a way and apply it to other resources for sure.
Yeah. That's a very good graph, very good visual actually, on how like can expand your own knowledge.
Sure. So the Venn diagram consists of three circles. One represents your hobby, one represents your interest, and one represents your style and your work. Strictly speaking, about art. If you combine the three together and you overlap them, that little gray area in the center represents everything that you put in your artwork. And so that's the one thing that I wish I knew sooner, is to try to combine all these aspects together instead of just focusing so heavily on technique and not incorporate my personal, life stuff going on. And I think because back then I was really embarrassed by myself in a way, so that's why I didn't want to incorporate any of that into my work. But yeah, it's just overlapping these three little circles and combine them could really help, just help your craft flourish in a way and find your voice.
Yeah, that's very valuable insight. I love that. Love it, love it, love it. Okay, so what advice would you give to your younger self?
Same thing, don't be too anal about everything. Control the things that you can control, and yeah, just learn, keep learning, ask questions. Doesn't matter how dumb the questions you think they are, just ask if you have the desire or the goal to reach for whatever goal you have. Expand the network and just grow, not just with your craft but like personally as well.
That's great advice. Like, I'm sure younger Grace would be so grateful for that.
I will probably be too immature to understand any of the things that I just said. I was so lost, and I think that's why the person said I resemble my hamster so a lot. Because probably saw my younger self as, you know, being so blank minded and just, yeah, anyway.
Oh man. No, but I feel that the advice that you've given also comes with the maturity that you gained throughout like the years. So don't worry about it.
Yeah, we'll keep growing for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Last but not least, share with me your social media handle or your website. Come, I'm sure everybody wants to see your work and connect.
So my handle is Grace Wong Art. It's pretty straightforward, and my portfolio is the same name, Grace Wong Art.
Nice. Okay, I think with that we have concluded our interview. It's so nice chatting with you. So
nice chatting with you
too,
Kira.
Thank you for making the time. Yeah, of course, of course. So you take care, and I'll see you soon. Bye bye.
Bye. Bye, everyone.
The Ink and Paint Folk podcast is produced in partnership with Women in Animation, an organization dedicated to advancing women in the field of animation and reaching 50-50 by year 2025. Learn more at womeninanimation.org. Please also check out other great organizations and groups promoting diversity in the industry. Black and Animated, Rise Up Animation, Latinx in Animation, Asian Queens in Animation, and Diverse Tunes. This episode was produced by me, with the magic of the internet from beautiful Burbank, California. Music by Grace Tsai and TV's Kyle. Edited by Mae Murphy. All opinions expressed here are our own and do not represent those of our respective employers. Until next time, this has been the Ink and Paint Folk Podcast. Stay colorful.